Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
The Other Hand is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hi, Jim. Good to be back for the latest edition of The Other Hand. I'm going to start today with a hopefully relatively brief discussion of markets, because they've been particularly interesting over the last few days. The big rally that we've had in global stock markets started last October. And anybody that has savings, pensions, or just an interest in the stock market can't fail to have noticed a few things that have been going on. First of all, there's that big rally that I mentioned, led by the US in particular. And within the US, initially at least, it was a story about the Magnificent Seven: Meta, Microsoft, Apple, Tesla, and the usual list of suspects, very much driven by anything related to artificial intelligence. That was the early stages of the rally going into the turn of the year. More recently, it's broadened out. Other markets have also participated in the rally, even European equity markets, notwithstanding the weakness in the Eurozone economy. European equity markets have been on a bit of a tear as well. Japan, as we have commented before, going to an all-time high. So it's been a global rally broadening out from the Magnificent Seven. That broadening out has received less attention. A lot of people still think that it's only artificial intelligence and only those stocks. And even within those stocks, Tesla and Apple in particular have been going the wrong way of late. But lo and behold, over the last couple of days, there's been a pullback in the US equity market and also Japan and a little bit in Europe. The pullback in the States has been 2%. Now, in and of itself, that's not a big deal. 2% pullbacks are not unusual for equities. That's standard volatility, if you like, and shouldn't really exercise anybody other than those trading it in the very short term. It's noticeable, though, for a couple of reasons. It's the first 2% pullback we've had in the States since this rally started last October. So although it's hasn't happened in the last few months, it does happen reasonably regularly, as I say, but it's the first time it's happened in the recent rally. So that's worth noting. The other thing that I just wanted to sort of talk about was why it's happened. Now, one of the things that I've realized very late in life is that I have this intellectual pretension. Well, you could stop there and just say I'm pretentiously intellectual, Jim. I know you say that to me all the time.
I do,
but
Chris.
That when you're talking about markets, particularly on a day-to-day or even a week-to-week, month-to-month basis, my firm belief is that nobody has a clue what's going on. And what we do as market commentators do is make up stories, create narratives. And I sit here in my ivory tower and say that all these narratives, they might be right, but most of the time they're complete bollocks, and that we don't really know what's going on. And what I've learned, as I say, quite late in life, is that intellectual pretension is also bollocks, in the sense that I can sit here and tell people that we've no idea what's going on, but then they'll still come back at me and say, oh, go on, Chris, tell us what's going on. People want, need, desire stories. They want the narrative. They want the explanation. So here's the competing explanations for the recent pullback in equities, which might be over by the end of the day. Today is we're speaking before the release of the key labor market data for the States, which will send the market off in all sorts of different directions, no doubt, maybe even up. But the fall has been attributed to two possible causes. The first is that a Fed governor, a non-voting Fed governor, so he doesn't actually have anything to do with interest rates this year, Neil Kashkari, I think his name is, speculated for the first time from any Fed governor that there would not be any rate cuts in the States this year. And that got markets in a bit of a tiz, or certainly some commentators got exercised about that. And as we've been talking for quite some time, interest rate expectations have been slowly revised this year, always in the direction of saying less cuts. Now we have an official, a Fed official, saying that maybe, just maybe, there won't be any at all. And regular listeners to this podcast will know that you and I have disagreed about this, and I can't help mentioning this, Jim, because I know you're going to tell me you're in the money on Bitcoin later, but you're not in the money on your call on the Fed.
Chris, there's a long way to go, because there was a second Fed official out with a divergent message, basically saying there's room for two cuts in the second half of the year. So it's still all to play for, Chris. And if the labor market report today turns out to be a bit softer, I think I'm back in the money.
Well, they always say the trend is your friend. That's one of the key market cliches here. And the trend is very much for those number of interest rate cuts to be cut. I think we began the year thinking that there would be six or seven cuts in interest rates in the United States this year. And now, as you just say there, Jim, we're down to two and we're still moving. So I'm still clinging to my tentative forecast that there won't be any cuts. And I'm just interested to see that one Fed governor has joined in. I don't think that that was the thing that drove equity markets down, however, because the all-important bond market, which of course is very linked to those interest rate expectations, actually yields long-term interest rates fell a little bit yesterday when the stock market was going down. And if it was an interest rate story, I suspect that for that to have been consistent, bond yields, long-term interest rates should have been going up, not down. So I think something else was going on. So I think that brings us to the second possible driver of the falls in equity markets. And that's that other thing that you and I have been talking about all year, which is geopolitics. And there are several things going on there. There's the rumors flying around the place about what Iran is going to do in response to the Israeli attack on its consulate earlier this week, when that consulate was basically destroyed and several high-ranking Iranian Revolutionary Guard officials were killed. And that was in Damascus, I think, in Syria. And Iran has promised a response, and rumors are flying around all over the place, ranging from at one extreme that they're going to, and I use their words, not mine, calibrate their response to try and make sure it doesn't, whatever they do, trigger a regional conflagration. The other rumors that have been seen have been that they're going to attack a US embassy, which is definitely a non-calibrated response and would certainly trigger something quite serious. So people are very worried about what Iran is up to, what they're going to do next. And that's spilled over, along with everything else that's going on in the Middle East, into the oil price. And Brent crude, as we speak, is over $90 a barrel. There's now speculation we're going back to $100 a barrel. I've seen it here in the UK already starting to affect prices of petrol and diesel on the forecourt. They're now starting to edge up again. So the global growth story that we've been talking about is going to be damaged by that rise in oil prices. It's a tax, in a way, on oil consuming countries like the UK and Ireland. And it also adds to the anti-inflation problem that the world central banks are currently facing. So there's a lot going on, and I think a lot will go on. The key barometer for me, Jim, though, and I think you'd probably agree, please tell me if you do or you don't, is that oil price. If you like, it's a barometer of geopolitical tension, a barometer of geopolitical risk. And at the moment, sadly, it's going the wrong way.
Yeah, and no, I would agree with you. I think it is an oil price story basically at the moment, because as you say, Brent crude is just over $91 a barrel. That's up from 73 early December. And it's been driven by the Israeli strike on the diplomatic compound in Syria early in the week, and the, as you say, the Iranian response. And central bankers appear to worry about the inflationary impact of rising oil prices. I actually would be much more concerned about the deflationary impact of higher oil prices, because as you say, you know, it is a tax on consumers, it is a tax on business. So I actually think that the negative economic impact of $100 a barrel would far outweigh the impact on inflation. And it doesn't change my view on interest rates. You know, I think the European Central Bank is going to go before too long. And today, for example, we've got factory orders out of Germany weaker than expected. We have industrial output out of France also weaker than expected. And I just think that Eurozone, a growth story, is still a poor one. And I think the European Central Bank will move, and inflation is obviously coming down. In the case of the United States, we have some mild disagreement on where US rates are going. I still stick to my view. We will see, you know, some cuts, but certainly not as many as would have been factored in by the markets. But I think that's already been discounted by markets. So I agree with you. I think the key driver of market sentiment at the moment is undoubtedly global geopolitical tensions, and particularly the impact that's having on oil prices. One point that I thought was really interesting was we have Samsung coming out today with its first quarter profits up 931% year on year, with its chip component growing very, very strongly. So there we have the whole AI story continuing to impact very positively on markets. So, I mean, I think notwithstanding the nervousness about oil prices, global geopolitical tensions, the corporate earnings background for many companies is still a positive one.
Yeah, your mention of the Eurozone and the weakness coming through in some of the data this week, which is part of a trend that you and I have talked about, I think that there is a big growing contrast now between the euro area and the rest of the world, quite frankly, obviously, particularly the United States. The UK is somewhere in the middle of these two stories, I think. Another piece of data out this week, which caught my eye, given that we've talked about this many, many times, is the house price story in Europe, not just here in the UK and there in Ireland. And European house prices data out this week showed that they fell for the first time in a decade last year in 2023. And there were lots of regional variations. There was strong growth in markets of Eastern and Southern European countries. And in the Northern European area, where the bigger economies lie, there were big declines. Germany was one of the worst. It fell 8.4% last year, German property prices, beaten only by Luxembourg with a 9.1% drop. Finland property prices dropped 5.6%. Sweden dropped 5.3%. Croatia, Bulgaria, Lithuania, Poland, Portugal all rose, some by double digits. So really interesting contrast there. But because the biggest economies have their size in the aggregate statistics, euro area property prices fell for the first time in a decade. And that's something that you and I have talked about a lot in the context of interest rates and the effect that they're going to have on house prices. And I think it's, you know, following as we thought, which is with the possible exception of dear old Ireland, interest rates are having the expected impact on major housing markets in the euro area. And I also note in that regard that we've had an unexpected decline, small one, on the month in the UK today. Last month's one of the latest property price indices is showing a small fall. So interest rates are biting on property. The bigger story, I think, rather than house prices, although that impacts all of us directly, the other thing that will impact all of us indirectly is there's an ongoing crunch going on in commercial property, particularly offices, but also retail. Retail's been going on for some time because of the move to home shopping, the decline of the high street. But the working from home thing is really impacting on commercial property prices everywhere on both sides of the Atlantic. And that could well be something that builds as we go forward, particularly when it comes to what's going to happen to all the debt that's associated with that real estate and therefore the banking system. Where are there vulnerabilities in the banking system to commercial property? If that gets much worse, then I think the interest rate story, even in the United States, comes back, because if there is a financial problem as a result of commercial property prices, the central banks are going to have to try do something. We're not there yet, but a bit like oil prices, this is the other thing that I'm looking at very, very carefully, Jim.
So, Chris, are you saying that US rates could actually come down if there's a commercial property squeeze in the States?
When the facts change, dear boy, I will change my mind. At the moment, there is a commercial property squeeze. It's not a crash yet. But if it became a problem for the financial sector, I think that would accelerate rate cuts.
Politics is incredibly important, as we've said, at the moment. And, you know, we spoke back in January and described 2024 as the year of the vote. This weekend, there's a couple of important elections on the calendar. May not seem that important from this juncture, but I think they have significant importance. One is local elections in Poland. And what we will be watching for there is how Donald Tusk's party actually does, to see if his election victory is actually being reflected in growing support for his view of the world. And I think for those of us who care about the stability of the European Union, who care about what's going on in Ukraine and the attitude towards Russia, I think it would be very positive to see Tusk's party doing well in those elections. And we have elections in Slovakia. So what, you might ask, but there is a pro-EU diplomat called Ivan Korkok. Excuse my pronunciation. He's up against a pro-Russian called Peter Pellegrini, not to be confused with the brand of water. But the outcome of that election will also be incredibly important in terms of the attitude towards Russia and Ukraine. Another, a military story that I think is really important is that Germany has just announced structural changes to its armed forces. It's basically creating a central command to replace the separate entities that currently oversee domestic and foreign operations. And it is also setting up a special division to focus on cyber warfare. So basically, this is Germany, I think, getting itself ready for possible war with Russia.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
There's been a lot of talk in various places around Europe, including in some minor quarters here in the UK, about the need for conscription going forward.
Yeah.
And that's a scary thought for anybody.
Putin is redrawing the whole European landscape. There is no doubt about that.
And with the focus, quite understandably, on Gaza, a lot of people's eyes have been taken off the Ukraine ball, and Russia is advancing in Ukraine, not hugely, but every day, if you read the reports from the front line, they are making advances and taking advantage of the fact that Ukraine is very short of ammunition right now. And it is widely expected that once the ground dries out in Ukraine, that there is going to be June, July time, maybe a big Russian offensive. in which case Ukraine could be in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
The curious thing, of course, is that too many Republican Congress people in the United States believe Putin when he says that once he's got Ukraine, if he gets Ukraine, he will stop there. Just why they believe him, I have absolutely no idea. There's no chance he's going to stop there, no. as we have commented many times. But I think people need to be aware that Russia is winning in a way in Ukraine, yeah. And there is a good chance that something pretty catastrophic from a Ukrainian perspective, from our perspective, could happen later in the year. I'm encouraged by the fact that the Ukrainians are digging the kind of defensive lines that the Russians built, and those Russian defensive lines were the ones that stopped the Ukrainian counteroffensive last summer. But the tables have turned this year. It looks like there's going to be a big Russian push. Russia is crowing about the fact that they've had thousands of young men sign up in the wake of the Crocus attacks, patriotically joining the army. And there seems to be no shortage of Russian cannon fodder for the front line. Russian casualties on the front line are still horrendous every day, but they don't seem to care. And when you're faced with a well-equipped enemy, as Ukraine is, because the other thing that has happened over the last 2 years is the Russian economy has been completely transformed into a war economy, to the production of war materials. The Russians have lost, for example, 3,000 tanks over the last 2 years. That's roughly equivalent, almost exactly equivalent, to the stock of tanks that they had just before the war started. So their entire fleet of tanks, if you like, has gone. But it doesn't matter, because they are able to produce tanks at a rate now that is extraordinary, and they are bringing out an awful lot of mothballed Soviet-era tanks and refurbishing them. So there's no shortage of Russian men or materials, yeah, for that frontline carnage. And so Ukraine is faced with an enemy that doesn't care about casualties and has more than enough guns, tanks, bombs to keep attacking them.
And at the same time, despite sanctions, the Russian economy is doing okay. And in fact, the services purchasing managers index earlier this week strengthened further. So, you know, the destruction of the Russian economy just isn't happening. I mean, obviously, the other side of war, whenever that is and whatever it's going to look like, the whole German or Russian complexion will look significantly better, worse, are different, but for the moment, definitely the momentum is with Russia on many fronts, and that's why those election results in places like Poland and Slovakia are just so important in terms of the future complexion of Europe.
You mentioned sanctions there, Jim. There's an absolutely fascinating story about one particular luxury good that is subject unambiguously to sanctions to Russia. And that's luxury cars, things like Bentleys, Rolls-Royces, particularly from the UK, actually.
Yeah.
And Ed Conway of Sky News has had a fascinating story showing that before the war started, exports of things like cars that cost £200,000 or £300,000 to countries like Azerbaijan and Kazakhstan, you can probably guess what the exports looked like prior to the war to those countries. Nil.
Nil.
And they have exploded.
Exploded, yeah, yeah.
As the war started. So those cars are getting into Russia via those border countries. And of course, the UK car industry is saying, no, nothing to do with us, Gov. But Moscow showrooms are still full of these luxury cars selling for hundreds of thousands of pounds. And the photographs are there on the Sky News website to prove it.
Yeah.
And so that's one particular story of a more general point, which is that Russia is still getting hold of all the goods and that it needs for luxury consumption and, more importantly, for arms production. Because
yeah,
when they find these missiles downed in Ukraine, they're stuffed full of Western components still. So it's sanctions are not working.
No, they're not. Chris, if we could wrap up with a quick run through some stuff here in Ireland. We got March unemployment. The unemployment rate jumped a little bit from 4.2% to 4.3%, which is still virtually full employment. Female unemployment rate at 4.6% unchanged. The male rate up from 3.9% to 4%. and youth unemployment unchanged at 10.5%.
Is there any significance to that rise in unemployment, Jim?
I really don't think there is. It's up 9,400 on a year ago. I actually think a lot of that is down to what's happening in hospitality, particularly, you know, with the restaurant closures and so on that we've spoken about on numerous occasions. But there's 122,000 people unemployed at the moment, which is, you know, one of the lowest rates we've ever had in this country. So it's still a tight labour market, but a little bit of softening. And, you know, we saw earlier this week Italian unemployment rising a little bit as well. So certainly there are growing indications around the place that the interest rate tightening we've seen over the last couple of years is starting to impact on the previously impregnable labour markets. The other statistic we got in Ireland in the last couple of days, the end March exchequer returns. So we now have the picture for the first quarter of the year. A surplus of 262 million was delivered. That's down from that compares to a deficit of just under 2.1 billion in the same period last year. So that's an improvement of 2.3 billion. As always, the breakdown is interesting. Income tax, 7.9 billion collected, up 7.6% on last year. And that's reflecting the ongoing strength of the labour market and some wage growth creeping into that. VAT at 7.1 billion, the second largest component, up 5.4% on a year ago. That's reflecting the reasonable strength of consumer spending, but also, you know, car sales in the first 3 months of the year up by over 8%, and there's a lot of VAT paid on cars. The third component, which is always the interesting one, is corporation tax, 2.4 billion collected. Okay, and as you know, later in the year, most corporation tax is paid, but there's 2.4 billion collected in the first quarter. That's lower, 805 million lower than the same period last year. That's an annual decline of 24.8%. And in fact, for the month of March, alone, there was 1.9 billion taken in, which was 700 million or 28.6% lower than March of last year. So there's certainly ongoing strength in income tax and VAT, and that's reflecting the ongoing strength of economic activity on the ground, but the corporation tax piece is weak. The Department of Finance in the press release accompanying the exchequer returns suggested that this is probably, the corporation tax weakness is probably down to timing considerations rather than anything fundamentally changing. But this, as we've said many times, is one to keep watching, you know, how corporation tax evolves from month to month, because that's going to tell us a lot about the complexion of the public finances going forward. And in next week, we have Simon Harris presumably taking over as leader of the Fine Gael party and as Taoiseach. Well, he is leader of the Fine Gael party, but as Taoiseach, assuming he gets the requisite support in the Dáil, which I think he will. And the really interesting thing to see will be, you know, with a budget due in early October, what sort of fiscal stance he will push as Taoiseach, insofar as he can push a fiscal stance, given that he is in a coalition government with Fianna Fáil and the Greens. But the overall point I'm making really is that the public finance is still in a decent state of health, but the one to watch is the corporation tax piece, because we collected 24 billion approximately last year, very strong. Let's see, can that be repeated this year? And it's important that it is.
Great, Jim, thanks. Let's wrap it there. I just want to advertise a probable podcast of next week is that there was a study out this week from a couple of economics professors, very prominent economics professors, about the costs of potential reunification of Ireland. Always very topical, always very interesting. It's been a subject of much controversy over the years, actually. and different people bring their ideological baggage to it. This is an ideology-free zone, as far as I can tell, having read the report in some detail. They've done a great job, and we hope to be discussing it at length in a pod next week, hopefully with one of the authors. So something to look forward to for next week. But let's wrap it there. Jim, have a great weekend.
Yeah, likewise, Chris. Good to talk.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.